Hello, mga ka-PI.
As you know, this is admittedly a belated release of the third anniversary of the PI podcast. And for that, I thank all of you for listening and following the podcast up until today. However, today is September 21, the anniversary of the declaration of martial law. For this reason, I decided to do something different and show a new piece of Philippine history. I recently came across a letter addressed to former President Ferdinand Marcos Sr. The letter was written by the late attorney Eufemio Domingo, who at the time was an accomplished Mabini lawyer and would later be appointed as a chairman of the Commission on Audit during the administration of President Corazon Aquino. He was known by some as one of the last honest men in government. The letter was dated on August 28, 1973, almost a full year after the declaration of martial law. It conveys a very mixed message. While he does sympathize with President Marcos with the need for government control, instilling discipline on society, the curbing of a corrupt elite, and the alleviation of widespread poverty in the country, he also expressed doubts with the implementation of martial law, particularly the detainments, the extrajudicial killings, the disappearing activists, and the suspension of the writ of habeas corpus. He also did not necessarily believe in the immediate restoration of democracy either, but proposed a more enlightened liberal dictatorship, perhaps a compromise and appeal to Marcos's better nature in order to improve the country's dire situation. In the end, Attorney Domingo pleads for President Marcos to grant the Filipino nation a new social contract and national purpose, challenging him to be a true father of the nation. Honestly, I'm not entirely sure what to feel about this document. It certainly does not neatly fit in my own views, nor the views of today's political camps. What I can say is, even an intelligent man with integrity, like Attorney Eufemio Domingo, did not see the situation as black or white, even during martial law years itself. This is only the perspective of one man, but perhaps it is worth considering given the difficulty of our current situation. I share this document not to reassert or admonish his perspective, but to stir some conversation regarding our history and meaning of martial law. Although Attorney Domingo tried sending the letter to the president, it is unknown whether President Marcos Sr. received or read the letter. The following is an audio recording of myself reading the letter as faithfully as I can, for everyone to judge for themselves. I look forward to any comments or responses any listener may have. Thank you, and I hope you appreciate the recording. August 28, 1973, His Excellency Ferdinand E. Marcos, Malacañang, Manila. Dear Mr. President, allow me to intrude upon your busy hours and address to you for your consideration my thoughts on two important matters concerning our present government and our national effort to build a new and better society. I refer to, number one, the present political structure of our government and its constitutional basis, and two, the question of a national goal. I do not possess the credentials to speak with authority on these matters, and knowing as I do your intelligence and wisdom and the exceptional abilities of the men around you, it was only after a long period of hesitation that I finally decided to put my thoughts on paper and present them to you for your consideration. For I too have a stake in this government. Its success or failure would be mine to share. I shall be brief, Mr. President. First, the constitutional basis of government. An interim constitution. As a lawyer of no mean ability, with a long and checkered career in government, you must be fully aware of the legal and constitutional infirmities of this government. All orders, presidential decrees, etc., from Presidential Decree 1081 to the letter orders and general orders to the barangay plebiscite to the last referendum, are shot through with serious legal defects. they could not possibly stand test in an unfettered and impartial court of law. Be that as it may, the Filipino people have temporarily acquiesced to martial rule on the part of the poor because they are too preoccupied in the business of earning their daily ration of rice and corn, and on the part of the rich because of the increased opportunities and vastly improved climate for acquiring more wealth brought about by the peace and order purchased at the very costly price of the people's cherished liberties. The suspension of the writ of habeas corpus, the abolition of Congress, the setting aside of two constitutions, and the emasculation of the powers of the Supreme Court, the last bulwark of the people's liberties. You must also be aware that the people's acquiescence, this peace and order we now have, is a very fragile one, and will not withstand the buffeting winds of crisis, will surely come raging our way, winds from within and winds from without. It is not the peace and order upon which we could build our dream of a new society, of a glorious Philippines. Our people have been imbibing freedom for so long that liberty to them has become almost a vice, an addiction. They may be able to withstand a temporary denial of their liberties, but a prolonged deprivation of this inebriating drink will surely cause violent withdrawal symptoms of such intensity you may not be able to contain. For with what and for how long you will be able to sedate the people? Perhaps it is out of your awareness of this too, that you called for a referendum only a few months after the supposed approval of the 1973 Constitution, which vested in you all the powers of government, a sip of their favorite drink to quench their thirst, a promise of future referendums to keep them quiet in the meantime while you search for a magic formula for national greatness. As a hard-bitten politician, wizened in the ways of the Filipino voter, I doubt if you did derive assurance and comfort from the result of the referendum. True, there were more than 18 million yes votes against 2 million no votes. But these 2 million no votes are conviction votes, literate votes, unsolicited votes, votes cast in spite of the veiled and open threats, votes reflective of the true and honest sentiments of the voters. Even in the most populous state, 2 million is a number that must be reckoned with. Before going any further, I must hasten to add that I do not, at this time, advocate a return to representative form of government. As we have known it under the 1935 Constitution, nor even as envisioned under the 1973 Constitution. To do so would be a national disaster. But the present political structure is riddled with infirmities and uncertainties, which is holding the informed segment of our people from getting totally involved in a national effort to achieve whatever we must achieve. But more unsettling and greater causes for concern is that the shortcomings of the body politic will serve as ammo for a militant opposition to shatter the fragile peace and order we now enjoy. They are attractive and valid rallying points of opposition to the regime. Something, therefore, has to be done, and soon. Something that will put the regime on a sound political basis by removing uncertainties and squelch all political speculations. You might have intended the referendum to do this. It did not. I submit, Mr. President, that the time has now come for you to enter into a new covenant with the Filipino people. All efforts and pretenses at justifying the regime on the basis of the new constitution and its supposed approval by the barangays and its affirmation by the Timorous Supreme Court should be set aside. December 30th, 1973, must loom large in your mind. Before this date arrives, we must sign a new contract. An interim constitution creating a liberal dictatorship should therefore be presented to the people within the shortest possible time. Some of the salient features of this constitution should be: the draft shall be prepared by the Supreme Court along certain guidelines, if this be not feasible, a small group of senior citizens, none of whom have ever been in politics, should be asked to do it. It should have a fixed tenure of not less than 8 years, but not more than 12, with guaranteed return to democratic process under the 1973 Constitution, minus the objectionable features of the transitory provisions. The executive and legislative powers shall be lodged in the chief of state for the entire duration of the interim constitution. Unmodified Bill of Rights, for example, of the writ of habeas corpus, shall remain suspended in a modified form, in the sense that any person may be subject to arrest and detention for crimes mentioned under Section 16 of Article 4 of the 1973 Constitution, and for graft and corruption not exceeding a period of 1 year, after which the writ may be availed of. Similarly, a modified freedom of speech and press provision that will guarantee to the citizen the right to speak within certain bounds. That the chief of state shall designate his successor in case of his death or incapacity, said successor to serve the unexpired term. Ratification to be held in accordance with the revised election code. These, to my mind, will remove the doubts and uncertainties affecting our political structure, at the same time giving you all the powers you need to rule the nation and sufficient time to reform society. Just as important, it will also remove from the people the feeling that they have been cheated of their liberties and that you have imposed yourself upon them. Governors and governed will thus be able to address themselves without doubts and distractions to the common task of nation building. The national goal and ideology. After almost 1 year of absolute rule, there is little left of the enthusiasm and hope aroused in me upon your declaration of martial law. I am sure a growing number of people are sharing the same experience. Long before you took the bold step, I was convinced that the only solution for the someone to assume absolute control and provide central direction for government. When you finally did assume full control, I felt relieved. Strange indeed, Mr. President, for as a lawyer, I should have mourned the death of representative government. But I saw that the body politic was afflicted with an incurable cancer, and the only remedy was to kill it, to give way for the birth of a new one. So when you declared martial law, it was to me a call to arms to your people to lead them on the long and difficult journey from the land of bondage into the promised land. Your people responded. They awaited your orders. But after 12 months and over 300 presidential decrees, the people are still in the dark as to where we are going. For the new society, Mr. President, is a movement without a cause. Catchwords and slogans like Bagong Lipunan and Mabuhay ang Pilipino are empty and meaningless phrases for Juan de la Cruz. That is why to this day he remains passive. He has not gotten really involved. And people ask, what is wrong with the Filipino? I know you have been working very hard. I know that in everything that you do, your guiding principle has always been the welfare of your people. But it seems to me that all your efforts, as well as your plans, long and short term, are directed towards the satisfaction of the physiological needs of the people. I understand your concern for the people's material well-being. It is a legitimate concern of government, but it now seems to be the exclusive concern. Is this really the only purpose, the only reason for our existence as a nation? To provide more food, better clothing, better shelter, and more comforts for ourselves? If so, then our national life is a life without purpose, a life without meaning. And the paradox of it all is we will never achieve this material well-being. The lessons of history are before us. Material well-being in countries that have achieved it came not as a result of a conscious effort, rather as an inevitable byproduct of a national effort to achieve some other non-material goal. The glory of empire in Imperial Britain, the spread of Catholicism in the case of Catholic Spain, the spread of the democratic ideal in the case of America, the Bushido spirit in the case of Japan. The pursuance of these goals, goals that fired their people with imagination and daring, that made them give up their very lives, undergo untold sacrifices, and perform superhuman acts of heroism, brought about only as a bonus, the material well-being, the abundance we are now so frantically trying to achieve. I am not aware, Mr. President, of any great nation that ever had economic development as its national ideology, nor am I aware of any nation that ever became great without a national ideal. No amount of foreign investment, no amount of foreign economic aid, no amount of foreign loan will ever make our nation truly great and our people truly proud without the sustaining force and guiding light of a national ideal. We ask our people to be proud as Filipinos, Mr. President. What, may I ask, can the Filipinos be proud of? 400 years of slavery under the Spaniards, half a century of colonialism under the Americans, independence given to us on bended knees, the mess we made for our democratic institutions, the little progress, if progress it really is, through foreign aid, foreign loan, foreign investment, foreign this and foreign that. What, I pray, Mr. President, can Juan de la Cruz be proud of? I believe the time has now come for us to tell ourselves the truth. Let us tell our people we must now redeem our shameful past. Let us win anew our independence. Give it meaning and reality. Let us take the people into our confidence for conditions of the supposed foreign aid, the truth about foreign investments. Let us now decide and proclaim to the world that from here on, we will do things our own way, by ourselves, in our time. In short, Mr. President, let us now raise the banner of nationalism in its true, radiant colors. I realize the implication of this, Mr. President, for true nationalism under the present circumstances would be territorial integrity and removal of the vestiges of colonialism. It would mean, therefore, among other things, our asking the bases to leave, the Peace Corps, the American and Japanese, the U.S. aid, and invisible symbols of foreign presence and foreign involvement in our affairs. What I propose is no simple path of roses. If we will pursue the true path of nationalism, we will have to do a lot of things that will hurt us and hurt us good. Terrific pressures will be brought to bear upon us, not only from our outside sources, but more painful from some of our own people. We will be harassed, threatened, and get mauled, perhaps. I don't have to go into details for more than anyone, you, Mr. President, from the vantage point of your office and your knowledge of the affairs of state, are aware of the consequences. But if we are to realize our national destiny, we must be willing to pay the price. There can be no other way. Unless we are willing to do this, unless leadership is willing to take the challenge and assume the risk, then let us abandon all hope of ever building a new nation. Let us just exist and wait for a more courageous generation to do the job. Before you dismiss this as impractical and visionary, Mr. President, I hope you will consider your people's capacities and the sustaining power of an ideal. The Filipino is indeed already suffering, but this is not the limit of his endurance. He is capable of infinitely greater sacrifice. He knows how to fight for a cause. He knows how to die for an ideal. At no time in our history, Mr. President, have we been ever truly united, fighting for our very survival against a foreign foe. This perhaps is our great misfortune, because we have not been molded into a nation in the crucible of fire. Never has the national genius been truly challenged to bring out the best in the Filipino race. The times now present the opportunity we missed and that we now have the chance to rectify an error of history. Let us do it now. In times of crisis, Mr. President, a people need a hero. Our people are now asking for one they could follow to the very bowels of hell. They ask for a leader with daring and courage. They seek a leader with imagination to articulate their unrealized dream, a dream which previous leaders were too timid to proclaim. In ample measure, you have all these. Pick up their banner, Mr. President, and the people will do their share. You have asked for sacrifice. You have asked for discipline. You asked for unity. Give them a reason, and they'll all do these and more. In our history's Hall of Fame is a vacant throne above, which is inscribed the words, Father of his country. That throne awaits to be claimed. It awaits Ferdinand E. Marcos. Thank you. Very respectfully, Eufemio Domingo, Room 408, Trade Center Building, 482 Padre Faura, Ermita, Manila.